high slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat in clean. He scores. The captain does it again.
This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Welcome to Canucks Central. Bick and the Boss here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. Bick Nizar and the Boss is back. Craig McEwen. C-Mac, what's going on?
Oh, the buyout window started, Bick. It's like Christmas. Should we get the buyout window going at 650 and see who we can get rid of to get under the cap and get some more Kubota skid steers?
Look,
you've talked a lot about this and getting things going and the excitement of the off season and you know, hope always springs eternal this time of year, no matter what sport it is, when the year's done and you can look forward to next year. And seeing what the Wild did today, I mean, to excuse the bad pun or dad joke, it was a wild decision on their part, but obviously, is this just the beginning, let's hope, of some bigger, bolder, and perhaps better moves to come?
I'm trying to wrap my head around what Minnesota just did today. I get it. Tough circumstances, no movement clause, all this sort of stuff. You want to keep a Matt Dumba around and all this sort of stuff. And you weren't necessarily getting great value on the contract of Zach Parise. But for a team that's had a focus on, you know, pushing for the playoffs, when we thought, hey, are they kind of a rudderless team? Do they need, you know, kind of need to re-energize some things? And then Kirill Kaprizov steps in, you're thinking, okay, they got a bit of a future here with a star-level player, wins a Calder, all this sort of stuff. Keep pushing for that playoff bar. They've just lit $15 million of their cap on fire, not this upcoming season, but two seasons from now. And it's hurdles like that that become so difficult to overcome in the NHL. It's already tough enough to succeed in a flat cap environment. Now, the following season, it's $12.7 million against their cap, dead cap. The 2 years after that, it's $14.7 million on their cap, dead cap. It's so hard to navigate that and aspire for championships when you're playing from behind.
Well, but you have to make the determination, don't you, of whether you do that and you have that wasted money, or can those two players still help you? Listen, Parise had some injuries problems of late. I'm not so sure he contributes. Suter could be an interesting pickup for someone now, maybe to bargain basement rate, considering all the money he's going to be getting. But that's the thing, Bick. You weigh the cost-benefit analysis of, can these guys actually help us compete? If they can't, hey, maybe less of them is better than not all of their money coming off the books. That's the mindset that Minnesota has to take here moving forward. And in their humble opinion, those two deals, well, at the time were made because the franchise was struggling. You know, the state of hockey wasn't what it once was. That rink was always sold out. And then people stopped going because they weren't competing. But the payoff in it, just two playoff series wins after those deals were signed, never getting past the second round. I don't know that was money well spent. But at some point, I guess you got to figure you got to get out from underneath it.
For sure. And the other part of this, too, and I imagine this was part of the consideration, is the recapture issue, right? This is one of these old pre-CBA contracts that the term that backdives, and you get worried about, hey, if they retire, what are the penalties to me? And if you trade them away, if they retire, what are the penalties to me? Well, they've taken care of that now. When you buy them out, you don't have to worry about that at all. So I imagine that might be part of the consideration when you're looking at guys that are trending to a certain age, right? Like Parise and Ryan Suter are not young players. They're both 36 years old. Parise is turning 37 shortly. So that's part of the consideration is, do we really look at these players and think they have X amount of years left? And when you're forced into a position of, hey, we have to actually like go about our depth chart to see which ones we want to hang on to because of the Seattle expansion draft, maybe that accelerates that decision into what we saw today. But you mentioned, hey, Ryan Suter could be an interesting pickup because that's the name people, I think, both here in Vancouver and across the league are going to look at and say, that guy can still bring you real NHL value. Now, it's going to be at a cut rate, but that's the type of player that a lot of people want. I get he's 36, but if you're getting him for free, that, to me, it feels like someone who can slide into your top four, no problem, and that's how you raise the floor of your team.
Yeah, for sure. But if you look at this Vancouver Canucks team, I guess the question, Vic, comes down to, would you want him or an Alex Edler? Because I don't know that it could be both. I mean, anything's possible, but in all reality, kind of an aging veteran blue liner who, you know, has got some size, some mobility, maybe slowing down a little bit. It would come down for me, and I would almost look at it and go, I'd rather have Edler probably playing in my bottom pair and killing some penalties than Suter. In the simple fact that you know exactly what Alex Edler brings you, you know the cost of what he's going to be, probably take a bit more of a hometown discount. And honestly, I just think that might be the smarter move by the Canucks, but they have to kick the tires and look at everything right now as they try to improve their hockey club.
And it could mean anything, right? Like, we've heard Minnesota's name involved in just like back to Suter, like for what they're trying to do here, they could be planning something big here that they did open up space on their own cap there for Minnesota for this upcoming season. It's the charges that come thereafter. So I just wanted to highlight that. Someone just dropped me a text as well because I was getting things wrong apparently here on Canucks Central. But as far as the Canucks, the Edler situation, that's the tough one, right? Because there's only like so many slots. If you want to bring in a Ryan Suter, he's got value, and obviously he's had a very distinguished career at his age. But you just think of the slots right now. There's Quinn Hughes, there's Jack Rathbone, there's Olli Juolevi, and one of Alex Edler and Ryan Suter. And I would say, based on legacy, I think that might push Edler past Suter in that regard, even though, hey, I think he's really strong, really great player. And at this stage, I would maybe say he's better than Alex Edler. But yeah, based on the connection to your own franchise, I would just say, hey, Alex Edler makes sense for him to stay here. And then you've got your depth chart a bit more aligned, unless you intend to bring both in C-Mac. And
yeah,
how does that
I don't look, see that age and injury, but listen,
you love
the tall
guys though, Suter and
I do,
and Tyler Myers.
Twin,
that looks great to you, doesn't
towers,
it?
That would be a very good defensive pair. But here's the thing too, and I listened to the People's Show yesterday. Dan Sat and Randeep were kicking around, you know, would you bring a guy in on a 1 year, on a $1 million or whatever? Those players, you know, a la you know, Corey Perry, Jumbo Joe Thornton, those 1 year, $1 million only work if your team is right there for the Stanley Cup. So in Suter's case, I could see him. What if Tampa Bay said, hey, we're going to lose some defensemen here. We need a little bit of a, would you come play for us? And then he looks at it and goes, yeah, that makes sense to me. I can take this cut rate. Where Alex Edler, in my opinion, and listen, I'm not speaking for Alex. I haven't talked to him. I haven't talked to his agent. Might take a bit of a cut rate just because of the history with the club. So that's where you have to weigh this. Like, Suter may not come to Vancouver for $1 million or $2 million. He may want four, but he could go to a Tampa Bay where he goes, man, they got a chance of winning another cup or a Montreal or something, and then give that sweetheart of a deal for those teams that he views or his agent views that are that close to the Stanley Cup.
He could go to Colorado. They lose to Ryan Graves, and it's like, hey, we need a shutdown guy to play next to Cale Makar.
Great point.
He's lefty. You're lefty. This makes all the sense in the world. Like, and that's the benefit, you know, when you have a competitive team, is you're going to be able to do exactly that. Of, hey, we can bring you in on this 1 year show me deal. You get your chance to go play for a Stanley Cup. This is mutually beneficial. Whereas you're in Vancouver's scenario, you know, the debate between, if you're trying to make a debate between Edler and Suter, it's, your pitch to Alex Edler is you get to stay in the city you've played your whole career in. We want you here. You're valued here. But it's also going to be at our terms. And that's the sales pitch to an Edler.
Yeah. And, you know, on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, Dex says, so the top teams like the Lightning, Vegas, Boston, et cetera, who get the benefit to sign Suter type for a discount, guys like Suter want to go to a contender. Especially in this case, when you think the money is already in there, he's not worried necessarily about his yearly salary now. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, I want to go out and Ray Bork it, win a Stanley Cup somewhere else after Ray being Bork somewhere it. For a while. You know, I don't know that that's a term, but I just made that up off the top of my head. But you think of Bork when he chased it and he left Boston, and I was super surprised. I thought he'd, you know, die a Bruin, basically, but he went after it. And that's what these guys do when it comes to the idea of signing those cheaper deals, because they go to those spots where they think, and again, no guarantees in hockey, where they have the best chance of winning a Stanley Cup.
So we finally see a buyout today. We see a trade yesterday with Duncan Keith, a buyout today, and it's going to raise the question, hey, what point do the Vancouver Canucks consider dipping their toe into the buyout market as well? Ian McIntyre tweeting out earlier, calm on the surface, lots of paddling under the water for the Canucks this week, trying to use expansion draft leverage to make a deal. Nothing so far. Teams are looking for bargains, but sellers aren't giving away assets. And so, okay, maybe on the trade front, still a bit lukewarm. We got a couple of days till the protection lists have to get finalized, but the buyouts conversation continues up. And, you know, we're still waiting on a potential Jake Virtanen buyout in that scenario. But, you know, last night, Sat raised something very interesting on the People's Show, which, by the way, C-Mac, thanks for listening last night. Well played.
yes, no problem.
You know, he raised the question of, you know, from an asset point of view, just evaluating the contract and the money it takes to buy out the player, is that something that, you know, attracts to other teams? Could you get, you know, we've talked about expiring contracts. Can you trade something out to get something back in and take another, you know, middling player on a bad contract that can still provide you value? If you flip that conversation around and think, hey, would a team acquire Jake's contract for the sole purpose of buying out because it saves them money in that regard? Because if you know, from a buyout point of view, it's an attractive contract because you're paying one third and it's not going to cost you as much as other teams, like case in point, Minnesota today. Is that something that could be explored? I thought that was really interesting. I still have my reservations if that comes about, but you know, it's that level of creative thinking that at this point, when deadlines are approaching, like we are going to see this coming weekend, those are interesting machinations to try to come about.
Yeah, I love the, as you said, creativity, or, you know, looking at things in a different way, trying to solve the problem. But a couple things jump out to me in that scenario. First of all, I'm not 100% sure what the Canucks can and can't do with Jake Virtanen right now, considering, you know, contractually he's on leave. So I'm not an agent. I'm not a GM. I don't know, but I would be curious to find that answer out. And secondly, it would have to take a team, you know, to just say to someone, hey, buy this player out because it's going to help you. It still costs the money. It still costs your team that buyout. So it would be a club that would be flush, maybe went deep into the playoffs, had that revenue that has been missing for so many other hockey teams. Mm-hmm. And again, you just start to now narrow down that window, Bic, of who could actually not afford to do this, because I'm sure all owners could come up with that money, but would afford it as a luxury in the sense of doing this to help solve a problem, but we have the cash flow or the money that came in this past year that others didn't, that we would be able to do that. So that now your list starts to get a little smaller and smaller, but you know, give Sat credit for the idea of exploring mm-hmm. something and looking at it. And that's the thing that we don't know when we speculate about with GMs and organizations, and they have a lot smarter people working for their clubs than we are. But if we're coming up with this sort of stuff, you would hope, A, they're listening to the show, or B, they're coming up with similar thoughts and ideas and exploring all these types of avenues. Because, you know, to your point, what you just said about the fact that we're not sure what teams are going to do or not going to do, I get a sneaking suspicion that caution is going to play into this time around in the expansion draft, unlike the last one where people just seemed to kind of throw caution to the wind and didn't want to lose someone for something. Some teams might be just willing to bite the bullet and just lose one player and say, we're done with it. We're not going to give anyone else away.
Well, think of the Duncan Keith trade, right? Like, that's a weird price. To me, I thought a high price to pay for a team that was kind of in a bind, right? A player that wanted to leave, and now they're in a situation where they probably want to keep Stillman, Murphy, and Zadorov. They can do all of that now, and they get rewarded for it. And if what Ian McIntyre is just, you know, tweeting out here, saying, hey, teams are looking for bargains, but sellers aren't just giving away assets, that might slow up the trade market, which is fascinating because, like, the whole point of this exercise here of doing an expansion draft is these 30 teams should be working together to say, we have to keep 330 players. And they don't even need to be the best 330 players because there's some UFAs that are going to go exposed, which are going to be surprising. Like, I'm expecting Alex Ovechkin to be exposed. But Seattle's never going to pick him because they get this 48-hour window to talk to him. And if they talk to him, it's going to go, no, I'm staying in Washington.
Yeah.
And so that's the way you do it. So in this effort, you're expecting about the best 350 players in the NHL are going to get kept. That's what the goal of these 30 NHL GMs should be right now. And if you hold all the cards and say, you know what, we got screwed over last time, let's do nothing and just pay market price because I think Ryan Graves is worth a first-round pick and you got to give me a first-round pick. Well, that's not going to happen. And now you're going to lose this guy for nothing and you've pulled away from a player pool that should be pretty barren for Seattle, but you're letting it stay flush because you're not making these right types of moves. It's an easy exercise to look at, but the goal is keep the best 330 guys, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, and as we get to the pressure point of when deals have to be made, things will change, hopefully, and move, and this business of hockey will continue to churn along, but I do know in talking to some people around the league that people are I won't say felt they got fleeced the last time, but a really good job by George McPhee and company to utilize some strengths and to, you know, maneuver and all that. So once
they
were
more prepared for their own draft than the rest of the league was prepared for it.
Yes, but I don't think that's the case this time around. I think people are more prepared for everything because of the lessons learned and just seeing Vegas trot a team out that, you know, can go to the Stanley Cup final and compete year after year after year out of the gate. That's kind of scary. And, you know, you saw that case in the NBA with the Orlando Magic in what did they do? They changed the draft so that couldn't happen again. So these GMs and clubs are going to be a little smarter this time around.
650-650, your text messages come in for Don't At Me. We do it every day at 1:20 here on Canuck Central. It's Don't At Me. Don't At Me. It is for lease busters. Need or want out of your car lease? Avoid early termination and negative equity costs by going to leasebusters.com. Guaranteed lease relief. Don't At Me. This one's from Kyle from the island coming in. 650, 650. Phil Pritchard cried after seeing Tampa's treatment of the Stanley Cup. Dented it.
Ouch. I don't think his white gloves would be able to fix that, would they? No.
Dent isn't even the right word. They, like, warped the actual bowl of the cup. Is it too hot in Tampa? Just melted?
I'm
they
not
dropped
sure.
It?
Yeah, or did it bounce off someone's head or something? That's
Fear
been
not,
some
though.
Crazy stories. I do remember, Bick, covering the Grey Cup in Winnipeg, and Kelly Bates broke the Grey Cup holding it, and it snapped more like the top cup part snapped off the base. So it was like in two pieces, and they're sitting there going, uh-oh, what have we done? So I've seen that before, but not so much of a big dent like that.
Yeah, this one's from Chef Swagger at Hell's Kitchen. Don't At Me. Ken Holland wishes Minnesota made those buyouts a day or two earlier. Yeah, hey, that's part of this equation. Patience would have paid off for Ken Holland. But
do you not think he would have? He would have probably talked to, you know, around the league or got a sense of it. And listen, Kenny Holland today, great answer when questioned about, you know, why he did the move the way he did and holding the media accountable. And I had a good giggle, heard it on Rintoul and Sermon. And yeah, that was pretty interesting. But I would suspect Kenny Holland would kind of know.
Well, the conversation is, do you think you could get Ryan Suter? Yeah. And if the answer is no, well, then okay, it makes sense to go
but
get.
But he's looking for that, as he said, character, cup pedigree,
sure.
You know, gold medal. And Suter doesn't have what Duncan Keith has in that.
I will say, though, the pressure point of a guy available in the market should also drive down the price you gave up for what you did for Duncan Keith. To say, like, you know what, I don't want to do Duncan Keith, Ryan Suter's available. Like, that's part of the equation, too. That would have helped in this scenario.
Yep. You know, I totally agree. This one in the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Don't at me. We need to hear C-Mac sing again today. No, we don't.
No, we really don't.
That ship has sailed. We have
that was a unicorn. That was a one-time thing. You saw it. Just enjoy it. Just be happy that it happened, but we don't need to see it again.
You don't have to say you enjoyed it, but I did enjoy it, and I enjoyed yesterday, and it was fun coming on, poking a little fun at the English blokes. But we've moved on. Turn the page.
This one, Tanbeer, don't at me. I love Edler, one of my all-time favorite Canucks, but if he doesn't sign for less than $2 million AAV, he's not worth keeping. He should do the team a favor and take a Spezza deal. I wouldn't suspect it's going to be in the 750K range, but if he were to come back, like, I think we'll all be pleasantly surprised at what a contract might look like for him.
I would think so. I mean, Alex Edler has to decide whether he wants to go chase it somewhere or if he's comfortable here in helping this team grow and it's the young defense core, the parts of it that need some help to develop as well. Because he could be useful on a team, again, that's really close to a Stanley Cup as a depth, you know, guy who can do a lot of things well. And you just don't tax him with the minutes that sometimes the Canucks put on him. But my suspicion is, and again, no information here, is that Alex does like Vancouver. That I know for a fact. And, you know, probably wants to retire a Canuck so he can get one more year out of them or possibly, I guess, two at a great deal. Mm-hmm. Then Vancouver will look at it.
And I do think last year was so weird. I don't necessarily think he played up to his standard either. And I kind of just want to write off as much as I can for last year and think, where was Alex Edler two seasons ago? And I thought, in a place that he could still play in the NHL. And I think we saw flashes of it last year, but the circumstances of everything, even just surrounding him, I mean other parts of the team, not only his own personal life or anything like that, it really felt like a lot of players were playing uphill. And maybe everything gets sorted out, more investment in the team, more resources available, more staff, everything. And maybe we'll see a better version of Alex Edler as well next season.
I would
Many
think
candidates
so.
For that.
Yeah, I would think so, because not only were they playing uphill, some players were playing up the lineup in spots that, you know, realistically put him in a position to succeed, they'd be down a spot or two. And in Alex's case, he shows flashes, you're right, where he looks like that Edler of old, and then sometimes he doesn't. So in the right position, in the right role, he still could be very useful for this hockey team.
JFID, don't at me. Expansion roster deadline. Similar to trade deadline, most deals will come down to the wire as GMs try to maximize returns. Friday will be the fun day. That is from JFID. Yeah, I kind of feel like if we're going to see anything, we'll see them fairly late in the week.
Yeah, pressure points, right? With deals and negotiations and trades and everything. Right now, it's easy to say, no, up your ante or no, we need something more. But as it gets closer and these teams have made their decisions, man, we got to get rid of this guy. The offers aren't coming in. Then, you know, they get a little bit more urgent. I won't even say desperate, but urgent to make a deal happen.
Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen here on Sportsnet 650. We got to take a break. We'll be back with Jillian Kemmerer of the KHL Icecast podcast, getting a Podkolzin update from her. It is Tuesday, so we will talk to Will Scouch at 2:30 today, and Ianna Canson will join us at 2 o'clock. Excited to talk to Will. Because we get closer to the NHL draft. Your questions always welcome for that as well. 650, 650. And NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650. Brought to you by Connect Hearing. Take control of your hearing health and book your free hearing test at connecthearing.ca today. Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is your destination for all things Canucks. This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Central, Bick and the Boss, Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen. Canuck Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and stay under the cap by saving thousands on select Kubota skid steers and excavators. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. Jillian Kemmerer coming up in just a second from the KHL Icecast podcast. We'll get a report on Vasily Podkolzin, a part of the hype for next season. Podkolzin stepping in. Yannick Hansen will join us at 2 o'clock. And Will Scouch answering your NHL draft questions. Send them in coming up at 2:30. But, yeah, Podkolzin's an interesting guy to come into this because, look, he is a obviously a highly touted player going 10th overall. But when you think of, like, prototypes of what he is and just, like, the pure size of him, you know, he's a bulky player. Going to be at his peak playing weight, I imagine he'll be close to 200 pounds and hovering around, what, 6'1"-ish? You know, that's an entering style player who can play heavy, be hard on the puck, all that sort of stuff. And then we hear reports this week of, hey, the Canucks are after a guy with size to play center. Well, if Podkolzin's going to be on that third line, and you're looking for a center with the third line, or a center with some size on that third line, that could be a pretty beefy line to try to deal with.
Yeah, and in my opinion, Bick, it's managing the expectations and putting Podkolzin in a spot where, you know, eventually, hey, hopefully he pushes for some second line minutes here, adjusting to life in the National Hockey League. And by all accounts, the stuff that I've seen, he's learning English. He's getting ready and prepared to come here and feels like he's in a good spot. But let's not put too much pressure on him to step in and all of a sudden, oh, get top line minutes. Playing on the third line would be great for his development, in my opinion. You're right, if they could find a bigger center to play alongside him. And we've talked about this a lot before. If the Canucks could find a top six winger and maybe move Hoglander down a line, that third line now with Hoglander's tenacity and going after the puck, I think it would be really impressive for this hockey team, assuming they get the right center, the riddle in the middle is solved. And you look at a player like Hoglander who spent some time playing with men in Sweden, and, you know, we'll find out if how good the Swedish Elite League is compared to, you know, the Russian KHL. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, kind of similar in the sense that they've matured and maybe got some more adult strength by playing overseas and now coming to the NHL, not just as a raw 18, 19, you know, 19-year-old.
Yeah. You know, I'm still sheepish on that idea of Hoglander pushing him down. I get it. If you get someone that's qualified, you do it just because depth is death. But I thought 5-on-5, tremendous results for Nils Hoglander. So, you know, not something that tickles me as much as it does for you. You know, if we're moving Tanner Pearson down, different conversation. But
yeah, but I'm the boss. Listen, bud, let's be honest here. It's my opinion that matters, not yours.
You never want yes men around you. That's all I'll say.
But
let's get the conversation going with Jillian Kemmerer here from the KHL Icecast podcast. Jillian, thanks a lot for giving us some time today. The big focus in Vancouver for us is always about the inclusion of new talent and how does this team take that next step to back to competitiveness. And a lot of people have some stock and some hope in Vasily Podkolzin. Is he finally, you know, he's finally coming over? Will he make an impact? And especially after the NHL playoffs, everyone's watching Cole Caulfield and people get nervous. It's like, oh, I don't know if Podkolzin's at that level. You cover the KHL. When you watch Vasily Podkolzin, what really impressed you and what stood out to you?
So, first of all, guys, thanks so much for having me. It's great to chat with you. And I think that Vasily Podkolzin, if we look at his game overall, one thing that stuck out to me always was that when I first chatted with his development coaches over at SKA, I said to them, you know, what kind of player is this kid? He has all of the Russian skills that all of these flashy forwards that come out of the programs there have. But, you know, what does he have to make the jump to North America? And it was funny, his development coach, Daniel Bachner, who happens to be Canadian, by the way, and he's an excellent coach, he said to me, what I like about Podkolzin is that he has a little bit of a Canadian hockey player in him. He has this sort of aggressiveness, and he has this elite forechecking and this fight and this competitiveness and compete level that stereotypically a lot of people say Russian players don't have. And I don't necessarily think that that's fair, but that Podkolzin's always demonstrated throughout his career. I think he has this real leadership ability about him that he's demonstrated, whether we're talking about club or international play. And he's always had a very complete skill set that sets him apart. You know, Russian forwards are always flashy. They put up a lot of big numbers, but Podkolzin also has that off-puck decision-making. He's got some great defensive skills. So it's impossible to say with 100% prediction, like a crystal ball, okay, a player is going to come over and make an impact from day one, but he has the building blocks more than just the shot to make it happen. And I think that he's coming over with a lot more that I think Vancouver's going to have a lot to work with.
And that'll be great news for Canuck hockey fans. And we saw him in the World Juniors, and you talk about that leadership, the moment where he takes the bench by the scruff of the neck and tells them to get going. But I guess what I'd like to know is, how competitive is the KHL? You know, for us who watch NHL hockey, we know what the league is. We have a pretty good idea of the AHL. We know what the junior leagues in North America are, but the KHL is still a bit of a mystery. A lot of great players, a lot of great names, maybe, you know, towards the end of their career in some cases. But how good is that league, and how does that help prepare Podkolzin to come to North America?
Sure. And I think the best predictors and the best people that I ask tend to be the players that make the jump from the AHL to the KHL. And after a season or a couple of months, I tend to ask them, how do you rate the level of competitiveness? And a lot of the players, guys like Reid Boucher, for example, who just lifted the Gagarin Cup with Avangard Omsk, a lot of them will say to me, I believe that the KHL is more competitive. It's certainly universally, they will say, is more skilled. Yes, the North American game is faster. And a lot of that back in the day was actually boiling down to a difference in ice size. But the KHL is normalizing ice sizes. By the end of 2022, the Olympic sheet is getting phased out, and you'll have only the NHL sheet and then a hybrid that's just a little bit wider. So you do see a trending downward in ice size, which is going to pick up the speed of the game. And yes, there is an element that's more physical and more aggressive in North America. So there are some differences there, but it is a highly skilled league. You have some of the best young Russians and Europeans coming up through the ranks before they come to the NHL. And you also have some really talented players there that either choose not to go to the NHL, or they come back from the NHL if either they couldn't make the transition or it just didn't work out. So overall, I think it's a great preparation ground. And as time goes on, it's only getting better in that respect. So he is playing with and against some of the most skilled players, certainly in Europe, and I would argue around the world.
One of the concerns I think a lot of Canucks fans have, and even pre-draft, you know, when he started to slip in the draft, it's like, well, okay, the production hasn't been there. And yet, you know, you mentioned, hey, traditionally we look at Russian players as a certain archetype, and he kind of breaks that. But you watch him play, and there is that natural skill and that goal-scoring ability, and somehow it doesn't seem to translate into real box score production. Is that something that's kind of on his behalf, that he kind of sacrifices to do more for else, or is it just a case of maybe that next level isn't there for him?
I think to some extent it's actually been a matter of opportunity. And if you look and you isolate his playoff performance, for example, he actually had a really, really nice run in the postseason for SKA. He notched 11 points in 16 games. He was averaging about 2 minutes more on ice in the postseason than he was in the regular season. And he wasn't just scoring, he was scoring when it mattered. So when we were looking at, let's say, the Western Conference Finals, when we were looking at the big matchup against Moscow, which is their, not only their rivalry, like Moscow St. Petersburg has a New York LA kind of vibe, but also because they're the Army rivals, they actually have a similar historic background, the two teams. When they were up against each other in the postseason, he scored a big game winner in overtime. He has this ability to deliver when it counts. And so I think sometimes it was a matter of getting ice time. And in Russia, there's just a tradition where young players don't always get as much of an opportunity, even if they deserve it or they've earned it. It's just a matter of earning your stripes and working your way up. So he wasn't, you know, getting these kind of nonstop power play minutes, for example. And so I think the more minutes he has, the more you'll see it reflected there. But when he did get an opportunity, he certainly capitalized on it. And I think the postseason was a nice hint at that. Now, in Vancouver, When he gets some of those opportunities, of course, he's going to have to prove it, but he's also going to be surrounded by some wonderful talent. And what I think is nice about Todd Colson is that he has this sort of natural ability to carry his team on his shoulders. So, yes, I think the point that you made was really interesting about what he does and how he sacrifices. And he is a playmaker, so to speak. He does set up his teammates. There were a few times at World Juniors where I was getting quite frustrated watching him set up and then not seeing the finish. But I think that that's not going to be so much of a problem, especially when he gets to the NHL. But I certainly think the ability is there, and it's something that he's demonstrated to me. And he's only continued to demonstrate further, and I've seen progression, particularly going last season into this season, and particularly this postseason. I thought it was one of his best showings, really, since I started watching him in the KHL.
How excited, and maybe you can't answer this, so it might not be fair, but in all the research and in talking to people and possibly having conversations with him, how excited is he about this opportunity and how much does he want this? I know it's sometimes hard to wait the couple of years to come over here, but it appears like he's done the right things. He's developed a little bit more, probably a little bigger, obviously a little stronger, but how excited is he for this opportunity to come to North America and play in the National Hockey League?
There is no question that he is excited, that this is an opportunity he's waited his whole life for. His uncle, Valery Rakov, was actually a Soviet hockey player who was a childhood teammate, or teenage teammate, I should say, of Igor Larionov, who I know is someone very familiar to Vancouver fans and to worldwide fans. An interesting moment that came full circle for Vasily when he was coached by Larionov at World Juniors, and I know that he certainly had many conversations with Igor about what it takes and what the NHL responsibility and workload will look like. But this is a stage he's been preparing for steadily. He took all the right steps. I've said this before many times. There are different degrees of circumstances when it comes to development within the KHL. Not all development systems are created equal. And if you have a young prospect coming out of the K, there's really no greater system to be coming out of than SKA St. Petersburg. It is one of the most world-class organizations in Europe. They have a development pipeline that's essentially made of glass. All of the coaches are collaborating and watching over these players as they grow up through the different clubs, whether we're talking junior, we're talking VHL, which is like the KHL's AHL equivalent, and then eventually the main team. It reminds me a little bit more of La Masia at Barcelona than it does anything in hockey, really, especially in Russia. So it's a very, very cool system that he grew up through. He took his time. He didn't come over immediately. And I think that he has now all of that confidence underneath him. So it's not just a passion play. Of course, he's excited, but he also knows who he is as a competitor, and he's demonstrated his leadership capability throughout all of that time as well.
Jillian Kemmerer joining us here for a host of the IceCast podcast for the KHL. You're talking to Vancouver, and so when Pavel Bure does anything, we got to know about it. Is this appointment where he was named to the Russian Hockey Federation special representative? Is this academic? Is this figurehead? What does this role speak to you?
Okay, so I actually think this is a more important position than what it looks like on his face. So special representative for international affairs sounds kind of fluffy, but this is actually a very important year for Russian hockey, and it goes kind of underappreciated. So aside from the fact that it's an Olympic year, if we zoom out, it's been a rough couple of years for Russian sport on the international stage. I mean, we had the doping scandal that stripped them of using their flag, their anthem. They're reigning Olympic champions, but they didn't get all the celebration and fanfare that came with it. It's been a lot of humiliation and a lot of heartbreak. But now, when we look at December of this year going into next year, we've got the 75th anniversary of the founding of Red Army, and then we've got the 50th anniversary of the first time that Red Army and the NHL teams met at the Summit Series. So it's a huge opportunity for Russia hockey to like remind the world of what their legacy is and what they brought to the table. And there's really no better person than Pavel Bure to tell and reiterate that story, because his generation was the living bridge that brought that Russian style into NHL locker rooms. So if they build a communication strategy around Bure, and I'm really hoping that they will, and they have him articulating the story, aside from representing Russia, and also he's expected to replace Tretiak on the IIHF Council. He has to be elected, but it's widely expected he will be. It could be a really special opportunity for him to tell Russia Hockey's story in such a milestone year. So I think they hit the nail on the head. And I don't think that there's any fan base, and I know Vancouver will certainly get behind this, that doesn't want to hear more from the Rockets. So I, for one, really hope that we'll be hearing more from him. And hopefully he'll be sharing that legacy for another generation to take part in, because it's important to honor hockey's history. And Russia certainly has contributed a lot of it.
For sure, for sure. She's Jillian Kemmerer. You can follow her online, Jillian, at Jillian Kemmerer. Again, host of the IceCast, the KHL podcast. Thanks a lot for giving some time today, Jillian, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's Jillian Kemmerer here on Canucks Central. Bick Nizar, Craig McEwen, Bick and the Boss. Some interesting thoughts there on Put Colson. And, you know, I see a couple people texting in that you know, one of the guys that they're excited about to look for next season, because it's he's been just the toy that you're not allowed to open up, right? You buy it and you just, all right, one day the value will come full circle and I'll be glad I waited. Well, he's been in the box for 2 years and now he's here. And, you know, going to be part of the dynamic moving forward. And as I mentioned, C-Mac, it's, you know, a big body. And there's this demand that perhaps the Vancouver Canucks will follow that suit again to replace Brandon Sutter, if he doesn't come back, with another body type like that. And you start looking at how that second line looks, or the third line looks. It's getting pretty big. It's getting pretty massive. And I think the worry people have is, are they going to be skilled enough, though? Put Colson's production isn't there. Well, I would say I think he's underrated in his skill and his shot. It's maybe something that hasn't exploded, like maybe people see, but strength of competition matters in this scenario. He's a young kid in a men's league as well. And I think we'll see a nice development for him next year.
Yeah, and Jillian brought up a couple interesting points. One about his development, and there was a lot of talk that maybe the team in Russia, SKA, was holding him back a little bit in the sense that they were going to lose him. But to hear the more old school mentality where young players have to earn their way seems very Russian. So that leads me to believe that there's a lot more room for him to grow offensively when he comes to North America. And secondly, when, you know, she was getting mad at the TV, the World Juniors, and yelling at it for him trying to set people up, that also shows an intelligence and an awareness that if you're setting up a better hockey player at the National Hockey League, you know, they're going to finish some of those chances off, where a junior kid may not do that. So all that leads us to believe and hope and want that this kid can come over and have an impact fairly soon. And let's just temper the expectations on some levels, but great to hear about his readiness, his North Americanized way of looking at hockey, the way he plays and what he does, and fantastic insight there from Jillian to give us a peek behind the I won't say the Iron Curtain, because that's not there anymore, yeah. But just to take a look at it and to get some more information on this young up-and-coming prospect.
Brian and Poco saying Canucks should get Kuznetsov and Tarasenko to go with Put Colson, an all-Russian line. Kuznetsov, again, interesting player. I really like his game, but obviously some off-ice concerns, and I don't know if he comes with enough heft, C-Mac.
Yeah.
You know, he's not quite a Kevin Hayes, you know, 6'5 and 215. You start looking at names that fit the mold of a big guy down the center. Don't think Kuznetsov fits that mold, which is unfortunate because, hey, very talented player. Obviously should have won a Conn Smythe, or could have won a Conn Smythe. Lifted the Stanley Cup, but
just seems to be trending in the wrong direction, though, don't you think?
Sure.
Like, just a lot of, you know, the off-ice stuff, but even the on-ice production and being in the situation he's in, he should be flourishing, you would think, and has flourished in the past. So that would be the red flag for me with him.
But I'm just going to keep using the word, C-Mac. Heft.
Heft. You're really on this heft. I'm going to go with...
It's just such a funny word, though.
Mass, like, and mobility. I'm going mass and mobility. Okay. We need mass and mobility. But the heft, yeah, that's a very good word.
Yes. Okay.
Can you play with heft? Please define that for me, sir.
Here's what we'll do, because, you know, the size down the middle is going to be the conversation that everyone it might be the headliner of these next 10 days here if they get someone with mass and mobility for what you're talking about. We'll do a name game on the other side here. And right. I'll just throw some names by you, and you just say yes or no. All right? So we'll do that on the other side of the break. And if there's some names you want to submit, 650-650, text them in, and we'll throw those names by C-Mac as well. Coming up here on Bick and the Boss, Sportsnet 650.